the folks in the society of recent years have been after me to write reminiscences, which I have done, with only a moderate amount of prosaic license.
Were you doing anything on the national scene while you were in Philadelphia, or was it mostly local?
No, it started in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And with appointment to a publication committee. I'll take that back. We started work on modern electroplating while I was still in Philadelphia. The meeting at which all of those papers was presented was in Chicago in the fall of 41. But we had started work at least 2 years before. So I must have started work nationally then in Philadelphia about 1938-39. And the specific activity was in working on the editorial committee for modern electroplating, which turned out to be the first monograph published by the Society after some developments, which I think I'll talk about a little bit later.
Okay.
So I did get involved nationally in that way. And apparently things worked out pretty well for me. And modern electroplating did all right, too. And I've never made much of a point of this publicly, but I did most of the editorial work, largely because I had more experience in editorial work than any other member on the editorial committee. Their main job was selecting authors for the various chapters of modern electroplating, and then deciding whether or not the submitted manuscripts fulfilled the directives and whether or not material there was suitable and acceptable. But I edited practically everything as far as the mechanics of editing, putting down the scribbles in the margin and so on. And also I did the first galleys before passing them on to the authors. Because most authors don't know really how to work up galleys. And I had done so much of it with Commerce Clearinghouse that it was no problem.
Now, there was a division of electrodeposition that started, or was it you were involved with? I guess this is right after you went to Pittsburgh. No, this is still when you were in Philadelphia, according to what I have here. You were chairman in 42.
Yes. Now, the electrodeposition division, of course, was an old one within the society. Yes. I became secretary first in Pittsburgh, I think in 41, the year after I arrived there. And apparently I get elected secretary any place I go. But then went on to become chairman. And this was during the time that I was editing Modern Electroplating, because the papers were presented in the fall of 41, and I didn't edit the material for the transactions. That was done by Colin Flink. But I re-edited the things, really. For modern electroplating. So, wait a minute. No, I'll take that back. I edited the papers for the meeting.
Okay.
And Colin didn't have to do anything with them except approve for publication in the transactions. And I reworked them to some degree for publication as modern electroplating. And of course added four material and what I always called ass end material. So Most of that editorial work was done in both Philadelphia and Pittsburgh.
When you got to Pittsburgh, then, you were also and became eventually chairman of the Pittsburgh section as well. How would you compare the Pittsburgh section with the Philadelphia section?
It was much more industrial. Although there were good leaders in the academic area, too. And some of them became presidents of the society, Francis Frary with Alcoa, and Jake Warner with Carnegie Tech. And I think back, mainly industrial people that were active in the society. Because Westinghouse and Alcoa were the ringleaders of the Pittsburgh section. And incidentally, it's the reason the Pittsburgh section fell apart, is because the people in Westinghouse and Alcoa changed complexion. Now, I should say that the companies changed complexion. But it's people like Francis Frary with Alcoa, John Martin with Westinghouse, Sidney Barnett with Westinghouse, and there was a Norwegian chap who was very active in society but never became president. I'm sorry that sometimes I forget.
Oh, that's all right.
I'm getting very good at it.
You had mentioned earlier how good Swan was at proselytizing. Was anybody in the Pittsburgh or Philadelphia section doing that with students?
Jake Warner, yes.
Okay.
And to a degree, Paul Fugazi. You won't find much about Paul Fugazi in anywhere, except in some few very, very erudite publications. He was a teacher, first and foremost, and a thinker. He published very rarely, but he was also a very fine gentleman. And between Jake Warner and Paul Fugazi, we had quite a few students who joined during the 5 years that I was there. However, to some degree, of course, you must remember it was war years, and the number of students was small.
Where was Fugazi? Was he at Carnegie Tech also?
Carnegie Tech, yes, in chemistry there.
Was there anything else about the Pittsburgh era? We've talked a little bit about, you got out on the publication committee, and that was right after you left Pittsburgh, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes. No, I was on the publication committee while I was still in Pittsburgh, but I became chairman after I moved to Penn State.
Okay. What was the committee like when you joined it? And how were you appointed to that committee? Were you elected to it?
Appointed.
By whom?
By the then president.
Okay.
All members of committees in the Electrochemical Society, with a few exceptions, are appointed. The exceptions are that the chairman of Ways and Means and some other committees are the vice presidents, and their chairmanship is mandated by the Constitution or bylaws. All others are appointed. Now, this is committee members I'm talking mm-hmm. about. The board of directors, of course, is quite different. That's elected. I think you asked about the publication committee. It was me, to put it bluntly.
Okay.
Nobody else did any work. And the committee was relatively inactive. I tried to stir some things up, and maybe some of the things that came to pass might at least have been influenced by that story. because I felt that the committee ought to be doing more in publications. We have very strong opposition from Colin Fink, who was the perennial secretary of the society, very powerful. I got nowhere at all. It was only after the revolution, so to speak, when other people took over, that we got some place with publication. Although we put our foot in the door with modern electroplating.
That was the first?
That was the first monograph.
Okay. What kind of charge did that committee have at that time?
As far as I can recall, it was very vague, and I can't recall it.
Okay.
I can recall simply that, well, the chairman was a member of the board of directors, and maybe that was the only reason for having a publication committee meeting. No, actually, it was very weak, and I was had hoped I could do something about it, but I wasn't able to.
But at least you got the monograph series.
Yes.
And that was your idea, that monograph series?
No, the idea of the symposium which led up to it was Dick Hull's. And he was the ringleader and chairman of the electrodeposition division at the time, about 1938. And the initial publication of the papers presented at the meeting were the transactions, the routine transactions, mm-hmm. which were the semi-annual publication of the semi-annual meetings. And the volume for the Chicago 41 meeting contained not only all of the papers of the electroplating symposium, but also some other general papers that filled out the meeting agenda. Well, the transactions came only to members and were not offered for general sale. But there was a tremendous demand for the papers that constituted what had been simply the symposium on electroplating. And well, all of us as a group thought that we ought to publish a monograph. Fink and some others on the board of directors were very much opposed because the society would have to risk the cost of publishing with no guarantee, of course, of return. Ed Baker, who had been a member of the editorial committee for the electroplating symposium, was very much in favor of publishing a monograph. And he was the president of the society at the time. He forced it through as a board of directors activity or approval of publishing a monograph. Of course, it turned out to be a money maker, and really a money maker. The opposition to monographs in the board of directors disappeared completely, including Colin Fink. So after that, there was no trouble. The next monograph was Herb Ulick's Corrosion Handbook, which was a monumental effort. And it was published, unhappily, in my regard, by Wiley. Because, of course, once the publishing people had noticed that modern electroplating was selling like the proverbial stuff, they came around wanting to become publisher for the Electroplating Society. And Wiley succeeded in persuading the board of directors to enter into an agreement for a series of monographs to be published by Wiley. When the time came for the second edition of Modern Electroplating, because we had always envisioned a new edition every 10 years to keep it up to date. So when the time came, And Wiley was now the Monograph publisher. And they engaged Alan He became a director of publications for ASM and held that for many years. Damn it. This is critical, so I'll take this to one.
Sure.
Alan Gray. Alan Gray was selected by Wiley to edit the next edition of Modern Necropsy. Notice I said the next edition. Well, when they brought it out, there was no mention of the first edition. It was listed as following the Corrosion Handbook in the series. And the Corrosion Handbook came out in 48, whereas, of course, the Modern Electroplating came out in 42. Well, of course, we were absolutely outraged. And well, nothing came of the outrage. But that's why a lot of people were confused about the order of appearance as publications between Modern Electroplating and the Corrosion Handbook, including Bob Frankenthal. Mm. I remember Bob introduced the recipient of one of the awards of the society, and referred to modern to the Corrosion Handbook as the first monograph of the society. Of course, I was outraged. But he had just taken what appeared in the flyleaf in the format of Wiley's publication. Well, incidentally, I think that the issue of Interface, which will appear this month, has the story of the monograph.
Oh, okay.
So you can check what I'm saying now with what I wrote for that.
All right.
Are you familiar with Interface?
I'm not a member of the society.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well,
I am a chemist, but I'm not an electrochemist.
Well, Interface is the members' magazine for, and in a way, somewhat, but quite different from the old bulletin. The bulletin disappeared when the journal came along. But that's another story.
You essentially then left the publications committee around 1950?
I left it before that because I became only an ex officio member of the committee as editor of, technical editor of the journal.
The journal, okay.
So I was, the technical editor cannot be the chairman of the publications committee. So I have had no connection with the publication committee since 1949, except once in a while they asked me to sit in with them.
I know we talked about this earlier, but I don't know if we had the dates down as to when you were technical editor for the journal.
It was 49 and 50.
Okay. And that's when you turned it over to Norman Hackerman.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did technical editor mean?
We did everything with the journal except about two pages.
Okay.
The technical editor, there was an editor originally. And really all that he did was to write the editorial, which appeared in the formatter. All the rest of it was the responsibility of the technical editor. So that's, the technical editor really was the editor. And in due course, not very soon, but in due course, the board of directors realized this and abolished the term technical director, and simply had, did I say technical director? I meant technical editor. And simply had editor of the journal.
What kind of acceptance rate did you have on papers at that time?
I can't remember. I just can't remember. That's too long ago. After all, that's 54 years.
I know.
44 years. Well, I just can't remember. Well, if it's, it might well be that there are records in society, but I would hate to try to find them.
Did you?
Let's. Maybe I can answer it in a general way.
Okay.
I don't recall that we had very many rejections because there were lots of new things going on and people were getting into new areas. And the papers that were being offered for publication then were so often new material that you didn't care how bad they were. You were delighted when they were good, but if they weren't so good, you fixed them up and published them anyway. A specific example was the matter of fluorescent materials. The Electrochemical Society was the leading publisher of the material, of the work that was going on in ceramics, really, of investigating fluorescent materials. It ended up here and there. I was heavily criticized because I published, while I was editor, some materials that were just out and out ceramics. They just didn't have any connection with electroplating, or with electrochemistry, except that I was advised by Weil, Waldemar Weil, that this was going to be an area which was going to be connected with a lot of things, including chemistry, as something very different from ceramics. Waldemar Weil was at Penn State as director of a research project or activity sponsored by a consortium of glass manufacturers. And very peculiar chap, but brilliant.
Why?
So he supported me.
Okay. Why would these people be submitting papers of that kind to you? Would they be? Would they?
There's no place else for them.
Okay, they're being rejected elsewhere.
And also, they were activated by bombardment.
Mm-hmm.
That was really the connection. Because even these are, of course, activated by bombardment.
Well, as you said earlier, what impressed you about the society was its diversity.
Yes.
And
always has been. Right from the very first meeting, that has been my reaction to the society and a reason for becoming active in it. And continuing to this day, I'm not active at all professionally anymore. Haven't been since I retired in 71. Except that I follow things.
Mm-hmm.
And the Electrochemical Society has so many branches that it's the place to follow things.
Perhaps we should look at, I want to wait before we get to your term as president of the society, but on this list, the pre-presidential society activities, we've talked about local sections and divisions, publications. You were also on awards, several award committees.
On a lot of them. In fact, I just can't remember them all.
Okay. Is there anything particular about those committees? Were the types of nominations you got pretty good nominations, or did you have to go asking for nominations?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. to some degree, it depended on the award. For instance, there was one called the Raber Award, a rather minor one. You had to fish for those. But a major award, like the Palladium Medal and so on, no problem. Mm-hmm. We got plenty of them, at least in those days. I understand they're encountering difficulty nowadays. I think largely because there are so many awards. And 14, 50 years ago, there were very few awards that were substantial in terms of both prestige and money.
Mm-hmm. So the society has a lot more, a larger number of awards now, is that what you're saying?
I was saying that the scientific community as a whole.
Oh, is it? Okay, all right.
Including the Electrochemical Society. Yes, we have far more awards. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons has been publication, because the various sections of the society have become rich, because royalties from the monographs arranged by the various sections and groups accrue in part to the society in general, but in the majority to the group that sponsored it and responsible for the publication. And this is spread not only to monographs but to proceedings and to special publications of one sort or another. Incidentally, I've forgotten how much modern electroplating brought in, but years ago, the Corrosion Handbook had brought in over $40,000 to the society and to the Corrosion Division. The Corrosion Division takes care of awards running around $5,000 and doesn't feel it in their treasury. It's been a bit of a problem. You have to watch the IRS.
Yes. Yes, I wonder if you're still non-profit when you're building up those reserves.
It has been a source of considerable planning on the society's part to keep the nose clear.